833-39-BIBLE. That's 833-39-BIBLE, 833-39-BIBLE.
A new poll is out regarding the popularity of Supreme Court nominee Judge Brett Kavanaugh. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes reports from Washington.
Americans seem to be split largely along party lines about President Trump's choice for U.S. Supreme Court justice. A new Pew Research poll showing 73% who identify themselves as Republicans and like-leaning independents support confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh to fill retiring Justice Anthony Kennedy's seat. But in contrast, 63% of their Democratic counterparts say the Senate should deny him that lifetime post.
And news is out regarding Amazon Prime Day. Amazon is saying it was the biggest shopping event with over 100 million products sold. Some of the best-selling products included the Fire TV Stick, Alexa Voice Remote, and Echo Dot. Industry analysts say Amazon could ring up at least $3.6 billion in sales globally through midnight on Tuesday. This is USA Radio News.
When posting on most job sites, you get candidates.
I'm the sales director.
I'm the sales director you're looking for.
But when you post on Indeed.com, you get the candidates just right for you.
I'm a sales director with an MBA, over 10 years experience, who's also fluent in Japanese.
With Indeed, you can add screener questions for a less time-consuming route to your short list of qualified candidates.
Arigato.
Hiring's better when you've got your short list. Save time on hiring when you post a job on Indeed. Get started today at Indeed.com/hire.
Four states followed through on pledges to sue Congress over the $1.5 trillion tax cut law, saying it infringes on their states' rights. The lawsuit filed in federal court by the attorney generals of New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and Maryland argued that the $10,000 limit on the amount of state and local taxes that residents can deduct exceeds Congress's authority. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo held a press conference yesterday.
This is not what our founding fathers intended. It is un-American.
Meanwhile, House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Kevin Brady says this lawsuit is going nowhere.
From the standpoint, the tax cuts in these high-tax states are real for middle-class families in a big way. These states are going to fail. This is a gimmick. And what I worry about is that it'll end up landing back on taxpayers. The truth is, high-tax states like New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, California will receive a windfall in their state governments from tax reform. The big question is, do they pocket that in Albany and other capitals, or do they pass it on to their taxpayers? Our point is, pass it on, stop the gimmicks, help their local taxpayers.
Milwaukee Brewers reliever Josh Hader's All-Star experience went from bad to worse. After a bumpy outing in his first All-Star appearance, the reliever suddenly found himself caught up in a Twitter firestorm, as late during the All-Star game, some racist and anti-gay tweets that he had sent when he was a teenager surfaced. Hader, who was 17 at the time, apologized for his actions. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Welcome to Destination Hockey. I am here with Islanders prospect Noah Dobson. Thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. So hockey has been in your blood your entire life. When in your childhood did a hockey career start, and when did you start having dreams of playing in the NHL?
Yeah, I started from a pretty young age. I think that I started to learn how to skate when around 4 or 5, and then just growing up in Summerside playing minor hockey for the Capitals, it just came a dream of mine playing in the NHL one day, and it just kept trying to work towards that dream.
Yeah, that's really cool. And a lot of these, you know, prospects that I've talked to, it seems that they've had interesting stories in regards to their positions. Did you always know you wanted to be a defenseman, or did you try forward and goalie at any time?
My dad played goalie growing up. Just he played high school hockey as a goalie. So at first I kind of went in the net for a couple games, and I ended up didn't really like that much. I kind of found it a little boring. I wanted to be able to have the puck in my stick and stuff. So I kind of went out and played defense. From there on, I've been a defenseman for the rest of my time playing hockey.
So was your dad your biggest role model growing up?
Yeah, I think both my parents, I mean, they sacrificed so much to help me get to where I am today, and they've always been willing to support me and helped me get to where I am today. And if I ever needed anything, they were always there for me. So they definitely been two of my role models growing up.
And one thing they did, you guys came to a decision to play in Austria for a year. So how formative of an experience was that? And how cool was it to play overseas?
Yeah, it was an unbelievable experience for me. I mean, as a 15-year-old kid, getting to live on a different side of the world and see those different countries across Europe and play the game you love at the same time, it's pretty special, and I have memories that will last me for the rest of my lifetime. And obviously for my parents, that thing, trusting me and sacrificing a lot of me to allow their kid go overseas by himself for a year says a lot about how much they wanted to support me and help me get to where I am today. So overall, it was a great experience, and I was definitely happy with my decision to go over there.
How much more competitive were the games in Austria? Was that the most hardcore and competitive hockey you've played in your life?
Well, yeah, I think it was pretty similar back home. The big thing for me is the development side of thing. I mean, we were on the ice in the gym every day in the state-of-the-art facilities at the Red Bull Academy with skate treadmills, synthetic ice, two Olympic ice surfaces, and all that stuff that helped me get improve my game and develop as a player. And that was a big thing for me that I was looking to improve on, and I really felt like it helped me.
And this year, you've really had a ton of success. You basically won everything you possibly could, including the Hinkle Gold, the championship at the QMJHL level, and the Memorial Cup. So how will this winning mentality transition into your pursuit of an NHL career?
Yeah, definitely. I think growing up as a kid, I was always competitive, and I had to see myself as a winner. I mean, my minor hockey team growing up, we won a lot of stuff, and I kind of just grew up in that culture of winning. And that's what I really strive on. It's the best feeling in the world, winning a championship. And this year has been a pretty surreal year with having the opportunity to win three championships with the gold medal of Ivan Hlinka and the President's Cup and the QMJHL and winning the Holy Grail of junior hockey and the Memorial Cup. It's been a pretty crazy year, and definitely look towards taking my experience of winning these championships in junior and throughout my life and working towards trying to win a Stanley Cup one day.
Yeah, and one thing that really helped your teams is you have a very strong two-way game. It's definitely one of your strengths. So how valuable is it for you to play such a strong two-way game?
Yeah, I think it's very important, especially if you look at the game now. There's not too many one-dimensional D-men, especially. You got to be able to defend, and at the same time, you got to be able to get up in the rush and create offense, too. So I take great pride in having a strong defensive game and being reliable defensively, taking care of my own in first. But at the same time, when the opportunities come to get up in the rush and create some offense and try and produce offensively, I take that, too.
And on June 1st, you said your goal for the summer was to get your body ready and add some strength so you can play with the men at the NHL level. So how is this goal progressing?
Yeah, no, it's kind of a crazy summer with all the stuff going on and how busy it is and the short time period as I was playing right up to the end of May, early June. But I have a good plan in place. I'm training down in California with the sports scientist, performance coach, Chris Munford. So I've been down there, and looking forward to getting ready for training camp, and I have the World Junior Selection Camp coming up in Kamloops at the end of the month, so I'm getting ready for that as well. So obviously it's a huge summer. I'm working really hard. Obviously my main goal is to get stronger and develop a little more physically so that I'm ready for an NHL camp in September.
Yeah, and I know you had a workout this morning. You're working with this sports scientist. So take us through one of your daily workouts. How cool is it to really have someone there who's helping you and trying to get you to the NHL body that you need?
Yeah, no, it's great. I think for me, a big thing is obviously I need to gain that strength, but at the same time, I need to gain weight, but it has to be the right weight. So with all the weight I'm gaining, I have to make sure I'm adding that strength with the weight that comes with it. So obviously in the business for a long time, and he knows what's going on, so he's been a big help for me, and obviously working hard and just trying to improve every day and get ready for camp.
And one thing that this strength is helping you with, it definitely helps with your shot. You led all QMJHL blue liners with 4.12 shots per game, which is a really impressive number. How much do you value getting shots on net in your game?
Yeah, it's very important. I think as you look at the defense and the NHL today, the way they produce points is usually from the point, getting the pucks on net, and having your forwards bang home the rebounds. So I think it's definitely a big part of my game. I improved a lot over the year, and it's definitely part of my game I'm looking to continue improving with more strength and get stronger, a little more weight. The velocity of the shot's going to get a little harder, too, so that's definitely going to be beneficial. I'm saying that with the strength comes, you know, play more physical, trying to turn into a more complete player, having that physical game as well in the corners and battling against the bigger guys and compete. So, obviously a big part of my game and looking to improve, and I feel like if I get to that level, it'll be a big improvement in my game overall.
Yeah, and at the NHL Combine, that was in early June, there was this sort of rivalry amongst the analysts. You, there was Evan Burchard, there was Quinn Hughes. Were you kind of, with these guys, were you kind of going back and forth, kind of seeing who would go higher, or were you just looking at these guys as your friends and trying to help each other out?
Yeah, no, I think it's just more going through the same process together. I mean, we got to spend a little bit of time together with those guys and all the top prospects, so it was good to become friends with some of the guys that go through the same things you do and have went through the same thing throughout the year you did. So it's more of just getting to know each other off the ice, as you know a lot about them as a player, but it's good to get to know these other guys that go through the same thing you do as a person too. So overall, the whole experience was great, and I really enjoyed getting to know those guys.
Yeah, and during the draft process, there was this interview process. I know you met with Detroit and Chicago. How did the interview process go with the Islanders? Did you interview with them, and did you think there was a possibility that Lou Lamoriello would draft you?
Well, yeah, it was kind of throughout the year, I met with the Quebec scout who scouted the league in I think it was December maybe, and then I actually didn't even meet with the Islanders at the Combine. I got in there late, so I had a pretty tight schedule, so it's kind of funny to think that a team that you didn't meet with ended up drafting you, so, but obviously I'm very excited to be part of their organization. I think they got great people in place and lots of young talent coming up, so it's definitely exciting.
So going in, obviously the Islanders, you know, they weren't on the top of your radar, but the Islanders have this prestige. They've got Lou Lamoriello. So how, when you got drafted, what did Lou Lamoriello say to you, and how did that really make you comfortable to be a New York Islander?
Yeah, no, he just kind of welcomed you to the organization and stuff. I was excited to have you in that, but obviously when my name was called to join the Islanders organization, I was ecstatic. I mean, it's a dream come true itself to get drafted in NHL, but be joining such a prestigious organization like the Islanders and the history they have and the people they have in place now to try and build towards winning Stanley Cup, I'm very excited to be part of it.
Yeah, and you were in a unique situation. You and Oliver Wahlstrom were picked back-to-back. That doesn't usually happen. So have you sort of had more of a special relationship with Oliver now that you guys went through that process together?
Yeah, definitely. I got to get to know him a little more. I didn't know him. I knew him as a player before, but as a person, not so much. So it was good to get to know him off the ice. And he's a great guy on and off the ice and a great player, obviously. So it was great to have a guy go through the process with you and coming into an organization that you're just drafted together, 11 and 12. So it was a pretty cool experience, and obviously glad to get to know him a little more off the ice.
When you were drafted, it was a really cool experience, obviously, and I know a lot of Islanders players reached out to you. So who were some of the guys that texted you and reached out to you and welcomed you to the Islanders?
Yeah, no, it was pretty cool. I mean, I got lots of texts from some guys on the team, like Matt Barzell, Anthony Beauvillier, Josh Bailey, Anders Lee, John Tavares texted me as well, so I think there might have been one or two more guys, but it was pretty cool to get texts from those guys. I think it says a lot about the organization, how well they treat the young guys and welcome them to the organization, so it's definitely a pretty cool experience to get a text from, I mean, even a guy like John Tavares and then a guy like Matt Barzell, who just won the Rookie of the Year, so it's definitely great to see that, and it makes me feel a little more welcome getting a message from the players like that.
How cool was it to receive that text from the captain at the time, John Tavares? Was that like an experience that you really thought, I made it, a guy like John Tavares is texting me? How cool was that?
Yeah, it was very cool. I mean, he's one of the best centers in the game today, and to get a text from him, it made me feel pretty special. And obviously, like I said, it shows a lot about the organization, the character of their guys, taking the time to text a young guy just drafted and welcome to the organization. So it was pretty cool for sure.
Yeah, and John Tavares, he was a guy, he was an Islander until July 1st. The Islanders have had a very interesting offseason. Have you been paying attention to some of the off-the-ice drama that the Islanders have been going through, or are you just focusing on your offseason regimen and just training?
Well, I think I've seen a little bit of it, just following the social media accounts and that, and seeing a little bit of the signings, and obviously with the Tavares situation, but I think the main goal right for me right now, it's just focusing on my game and trying to improve my game and get ready for an NHL camp in September.
So how has your life changed since you were drafted? What exactly are you focusing more on now?
Well, I think it's really a big change, but I think it just comes a little more real. And obviously, being drafted in NHL is a dream come true itself, but the main goal right now is to try and play in the NHL. So it's the first step in the path of getting towards that. But obviously, it lies ahead a lot of hard work and stuff. So I'm just trying to get ready for that and keep working hard and working towards the goal of playing in the NHL.
So who are some of the defensemen at the NHL level that you model your game after?
Yeah, I see myself kind of play a similar style as a guy like Alex Petrangelo. I think he plays a two-way puck-moving game. He's reliable defensively. At the same time, he's able to quarterback power play and produce offensively. So that's kind of a similar style I like to play.
Cool. And another thing, you did the developmental camp with the New York Islanders. Jakub Sarek, I spoke to during that camp. He said that was a really cool experience. You went to Mets games. You had this really cool scrimmage. So how amazing of an experience was it to do this developmental camp and meet some of your future teammates?
Yeah, it was a great experience. I mean, just come a little familiar with the coaching staff and the surroundings of the practice facility and stuff, and get out in the city a bit, go to a Mets game, like you said, and all that. So it was a great experience. Got to meet a lot of great players and great guys off the ice. So it was cool to get your feet wet in the first NHL camp. And obviously gives you a little more of what to expect going into September into rookie camp and main camp.
And those fans at the blue and white scrimmage, I know they packed north well. I unfortunately was unable to attend, but I heard it was a crazy atmosphere. So how cool was it to get your first taste of playing in front of the Islanders faithful?
Yeah, it was great to see that many fans come out for, a rookie scrimmage and development camp in June. So I think it says a lot about the fan base they have. And obviously, it's pretty exciting to see that. It kind of gives you a taste of what it would be like one day to play in the Barclays Center in front of all those fans. So it definitely gives you a little extra motivation to keep working towards that goal.
Mm-hmm. And overall, just one final question. As an NHL prospect, how fun is it to be pursuing that dream of being an NHL player?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, this is what you dream of as a kid. I mean, in my mind, there's no better life than being an NHL player. So obviously, a lot of hard work lies ahead, but it's something that you dream of as a kid and you want to keep working towards. So whatever the future lies, I'm going to keep working and trying to pursue that dream.
Okay, well, that was a great interview. I learned so much about you, and it was really cool to hear someone so positive about their future in the NHL. So thank you so much for coming on the show today. It was an honor to speak to you, and good luck with the rest of your offseason.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Have a great day. Welcome back to Destination Hockey. I am here with a very special guest this afternoon. I'm here with Mr. Stan Fischler, the Maven himself. Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Pleasure to talk hockey with you guys, especially in the warm weather like this. It makes me feel cooler.
Yeah, it's beautiful out. So it's been a crazy few months. Let's cut right to the chase. The Islanders went through significant managerial and personnel change this offseason, and you've seen it all from the highest of highs to the lowest of lows. Now with Lou Lamoriello, someone you know quite well at the helm, how bright is the Islanders' future?
Well, it's bright in the sense that Lamoriello is very professional. I began contact with Lou when I was doing the Devils. He came to the team in 1987, and I followed his style and his successes as much as anybody in the media business. And he's a no-nonsense guy. Everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. He's a man for detail. The thing about Lou is that he welcomes challenges. I did a piece on him for the MSG website the other day, And, you know, we were talking about, you know, people who complain. And, you know, he was asked whether he is complaining about John Tavares going to Toronto. And his I loved his answer. He says, "Why complain? Nobody listens." his view is the same as my view about Tavares. He's in the rearview mirror, and it's now a Toronto challenge for him. And as far as the Islanders are concerned, as Chico Resch told me the other day, the Islanders are better off right now than they were had he signed with them. And Resch's reasoning was that this is a new, invigorated team. They now have a lot of infusion of youth. And Lou struck gold in the draft. He's got a couple of real studs. One of them could very well make the starting lineup, similar to what the Devils had with Hischier last year. So, in terms of Lou, this is what he likes. He likes to build. When he came to the Devils, they had never made the playoffs. He brought in a new coach in mid-season, Jim Schoenfeld, and poof, just like that, they made the playoffs and became a factor. So what's more challenging this time around is the fact that he doesn't have the kind of months that he had when he came to New Jersey. He actually he had more than half a season before he fired Doug Carpenter and he brought in Schoenfeld. This is a different kind of, well, every situation is different, but he's been thrust into an area now where he has to move very quickly. And he did. He got the cup-winning coach. How many guys can do that by snapping a finger? Mm-hmm. And, of course, Trotz brings in his Lane Lambert. So I'm very confident that Lou will do the right things because he's done the right things in the past.
That's awesome, Stan. No, he has an excellent track record, and he brings a ton to the table. Now, I've heard you speak before, and you've spoken a lot about how much you like Lou Lamoriello, as you just did now as well. And I know you have a ton of hockey stories to share with us and all our listeners. So maybe is there a Lou Lamoriello story that you could tell our audience that shows what kind of a culture he will bring to Long Island?
Well, I want to tell you a funny Lou Lamoriello story, because there was a Lou Lamoriello roast, which I hosted. And at the time, Johnny McClain was a fading player with the Devils. And Johnny McClain told me that he wanted to be back on the first line. Could I help him? Well, I wasn't the coach, and I had nothing I could do about it. But shortly thereafter, Lou took me to dinner. And every time we had dinner, he would ask me, what can I do to make the team better? And my point when I did the roast was I told the people one of the biggest misconceptions about Lou is that he yells. He's an autocrat, yells and screams. And I pointed out that Lou doesn't have to do that because there's such a thing as the Lou glare. And I experienced the Lou glare when we had dinner that night, because Lou asked me, what can I do, meaning me, what should I do to improve the team? And I remember what Johnny Mack had told me, so I said, why don't you put Johnny McClain back on the first line? And he shot me the Lou glare. And I told the audience when he shot me the Lou glare, I did something I had never done before or since in my life, and that is I picked up the check. Of course, then Lou would never let anybody pick up the check, so he gave me another glare and he grabbed the check out of my hand. But, Lou The one thing I can tell you in addition about Lou is that when John McMullen owned the Devils, and he was a wonderful guy and a good friend of mine, and John McMullen once told me, I got the greatest bargain in the world. I said, what do you mean? He said, I got Lou Lamoriello. Other people work an 8-hour day, a 9-hour day, a 12-hour day. Lou Lamoriello is the only guy who ever worked for me in any capacity who worked 24 hours a day. And that's basically what he's about. The other story is, I was downstairs after the Devils had won their first cup. They beat the Red Wings in four straight. And now the cup was on the ice. Gary Bettman presented the cup. And there was, you know what follows after that. There's a lot of stuff going on. And maybe about 10 minutes worth of celebration. And I walked back just outside the dressing room because I wanted to see who was coming in and who I might talk to. And who comes walking by practically at a half trot is Lou. I said, Lou, where are you going? He says, I'm going back to work. It's time to plan for next season. Imagine that. It was 10 minutes after he got the cup and already he was going back to his office to start next season. That's what kind of worker the Islanders got.
Wow. And the Islanders, they haven't really had, you know, a GM like this since Bill Torrey. Bill Torrey won a lot, and he really did great things for the Islanders. And Lou Lamoriello does the same thing. Do you see a lot of similarities between the two? And do you think Lou Lamoriello will take some of the strategies that Bill Torrey used when he was the GM of the Islanders?
Well, first of all, you're talking about an era of the 80s plus, and now we're talking about 2018. A lot has happened in the intervening seasons. The one thing that Lou and Bill Torrey have had in common is that both guys are smart. But in terms of the persona, they work differently. Now, Bill Torrey had what I consider the best coach in hockey history, certainly the best coach since expansion in Al Arbor, better than Scotty Bowman. Mm-hmm. Because he was more human. And Torrey was more of a fun guy out up front. Lou is a fun guy behind the scenes, but he's more business-oriented than Bill was. When Bill was running the Islanders, you have to understand that the personnel on teams was so much smaller. You didn't have guys doing analytics. You hardly had anybody doing video in those days. It was really pared down to the bone. Now you got layers and layers. But the one thing about Bill and Lou is that they were both hands on, and Lou knows exactly what's going on, even though he probably has personnel roster now that would be twice as much as Bill Torrey had, because we're in 2018, not 1980.
Mm-hmm. Stan, you brought up coaches, and especially Al Arbor. The Islanders have a new coach next season in Barry Trotz. How excited are you for him to be the bench boss of the New York Islanders next season?
Well, I'm more than excited. I'm 10 times enthused because they got the best. Trotz has been around. He's been successful wherever he's coached. And he took a Washington team that no expert would have dared predict would win the cup. He adjusted Ovechkin's game so that he became a more complete hockey player. And what I like about the situation that Trotz is in, he's the kind of guy, he's the best possible coach who will take the absence of Tavares and take the team that he's given and make it the best possible team, just as he did with Washington. You have to remember that Washington lost a whole bunch of guys, and it wasn't the same team, and everybody figured they'd fall apart. Now, I can see Barzal as your first-line center. I believe that he's going to try Beauvillier, who's a natural center, as the second line center. I think that I'll put it this way: I'm convinced that absolutely that Trotz will turn Brock Nelson into a better player and will have his best season as an Islander. Very, very, very enthused about Trotz and how he handles and how he molds Nelson into a better player. And you've got the fourth line that Don Cherry called the best fourth line in hockey, reunited with Matt Martin. It's no question, and everybody knows that from Lou to Trotz to any Islander fan, the defense has to be fixed. And this is going to be Trotz's biggest challenge. You've got a defense that was hurt the team last year. So they've got Lou will probably have to make a trade, see what's what. May put in one of the younger guys. Losing Cal DeHaan was not good. I thought Cal would be an asset to the club, but on the other hand, you take a situation like Vegas. You look at the Vegas defense at the start of last season, you think these guys came out of Mad Magazine, and they wind up going to the final. So this is where Trotz's genius will come into play, and also Lou in terms of filling any of the gaps.
Alexander Ovechkin, you mentioned it. He was able to do a full turnaround under Trotz, going from a minus player to a plus player, who focused on blocking shots and playing defense, and this was noticeable in the Stanley Cup final. Doug Waite was notorious for sometimes, I wouldn't say going after, but he definitely took some shots at Matt Barzal. How will Trotz help Barzal work on his defensive aspects of his game, one that does certainly need some touch-ups?
Part of the answer lies in the experience that Trotz has had. We're not talking... Doug Waite, who I love, is a great guy, but Doug Waite mentioned at least once, if not twice, to the media that he is, as a coach, he's a work in progress. And what he was basically telling us is that he doesn't have all the experience as other coaches do, and he's learning on the job, okay? Nothing wrong with that. Now, compare that with a guy like Trotz, who's been in this business for a long, long, long time, knows how to deal with people like Barzal. I believe that Trotz will be very, very effective in turning Hosang into a useful player. Now, back to the point about Barzal, the Islanders were in a situation where the kid practically had to carry the team. I'm talking about Barzal now. And doing what he did when he played in junior hockey in Seattle. And this is something that will come with the learning. Doesn't happen overnight. We saw that same thing happen with the Devils. And I believe that he will discipline Matthew, that Trotz will discipline him up to a point without being overbearing, because when you have a free spirit like Barzal, you have to let him do his thing within limits. And after all, the results were terrific. He had more points than Tavares as a rookie. I mean, so I feel very confident about the fact that he'll mature as a sophomore in the NHL should mature because of Trotz.
Mm-hmm. So, we've been talking a little bit about players who are likely to go through, let's say, resurgences now that there's a new coaching staff. And one player in particular that Islanders fans haven't been so happy with as of late, and his performance, is Andrew Ladd. You mentioned Brock Nelson might have a turnaround season. So what do you think is Andrew Ladd's future for this franchise?
Ladd has experience, and Ladd is still in his playing prime. What happened with Ladd last season and why he was, and I was, by the way, as disappointed as any Islander fan was disappointed in Ladd. I would say that the only player who disappointed me more than Ladd was Jason Chimera. And I wish him luck, but he certainly was no help to Doug Weight. I have a feeling that Ladd will shape up, and I don't mean just get a little bit better. I think that Ladd, under a new coach, with a situation where he is a leader, I mean, he could conceivably wind up getting the captaincy based on his experience, but certainly he has to get better. And he's another one, you mentioned, under a new coach. It's a whole new feel now with the team. New general manager, no-nonsense general manager, and you've got a guy like Ladd who knows the score. So I'll be very disappointed if he's not a significantly better player this coming season.
Trotz in Washington was able to utilize a bottom-pairing defense unit that of Kempe and Juice. It really was kind of a mishmash unit there, but he got the best out of it. One thing that the Islanders are doing this year, they're rolling out the same exact defensive group bearing a trade right now that was the worst in basically the last 10 years last season. Trotz is a defensive guru, we know that, but do you think he has the power to turn this group around even though it's the exact same unit that was very bad last year?
Well, the way you begin to answer the issue, the challenge, is style. Style of defense. And what I saw was, give you for instance, the game would start, the other team would get the puck, they throw it into the Islander zone, and a good portion of the time, the opposition would either get to the puck first or get to the puck fast enough so they could challenge. And too often, the opposition wound up with possession and then would start the pass to the blue line and the shots. And if they didn't score, they'd come awfully close. So what you have now is the opportunity of a system where when the puck comes in, it gets out as fast as it got in without any hesitation. The hesitation seemed to me to be part of the problem. They had Luke Richardson as the defensive coach, and as much as I like Luke, I didn't see any improvement from beginning to end, and I believe that with the personnel, you got room for improvement. Now, this also includes getting the puck from defense to the forwards. And that's another area that it requires bang, bang speed, not, you know, hanging around or whatever. So this is the answer to this is we'll see. We'll see, because we know the new coach has the savvy. We know that he is defense-oriented in the right kind of way, and we know that this will bring him back a defense that hardly was worthy of commendation and that needs work. So what are the two words? We'll see.
Stan, let's shift gears for a second. We've been talking a lot about our predictions for next year, but let's take things back for a second. You have, again, been around the league, the Islanders, the Rangers, and the Devils for so many years. You've interviewed so many players. who were some of your favorites to interview, and what are some stories you could share with us about some interviews you've had in the past?
Well, my favorite funny interview was actually a sidekick. It wasn't meant to be a sidekick, but Bruce Bennett was the cameraman, the photographer, and I was interviewing Ally Afraidy of the Capitals, who was one of my favorite guys, in the morning after the skate. And I was sitting there with Al, and he told me that he just got a new tattoo, and he wanted to show me the tattoo. Well, Al always had a Coke in one hand and a lit cigarette in another hand, which he did then. And he said to me, "Stan, do me a favor, hold my Coke and hold my cigarette." And so he could show me. So I took the cigarette and I took the Coke, and he rolled up his sleeves and he showed me the tattoo. And Bruce took this picture of me with the cigarette and the Coke, and it looked as if I'm interviewing the guy while I'm smoking a cigarette and holding a can of Coke in the other hand. And of course, it got plenty of laughs. But my favorite, sadly, I have to say, because it didn't last long enough, my all-time favorite was Nabokov when he was goaltending for the Islanders. Nabby and I had a kind of chemistry that I never had before with a goalie, and we all know that goalies tend to be a little bit eccentric. And Nabby, at first, you know, it took a while, and one day after a game, they won a game, and I said, "You know, this, what you did tonight reminds me of a song." And he said, "What song?" And I said, "The song is We Did It Before and We Can Do It Again." And he immediately seized the line, something like, "Why don't you sing it to me?" So I sang a couple of lines. So, and we, from that point on, we had a routine. Now, we didn't do this routine when they lost, because there was nothing to be funny about, but I'd still interview them after a loss, just that there was nothing necessarily to laugh about. Although we might have been, but the thing is, we had it was like, you know, like Abbott and Costello, Martin and Lewis, and it was me and Nappy. And it got to a point after about the fifth or the sixth interview where I would go right to Nappy, sit next to me, save the seat for me already, and the media would stand around like we were entertaining them. This was the way it was. It wasn't like once in a while. It was every time they won a game, I sit down with Nappy. I just give him a song, and it was a song and dance routine. So if we weren't dancing, we're doing verbal dancing. And he was my buddy, and unfortunately, it was near the end of his career. Otherwise, if he was 10 years younger, we would have we probably would have been on stage and had our own television show. But I love the guy. I still correspond with him in email, and that's my favorite.
Another entertaining aspect of your career was definitely the Dynasty era. It was really cool to, must have been really cool to watch the Islanders win 4 Stanley Cups. So one thing that I want to know, I've always seen, I obviously wasn't alive back then, but I've always seen the videos of the fans jumping on the ice, celebrating with the players. How much different of a time was it in those Stanley Cup celebrations, and how cool was it to be a part of them?
Well, it was right out of the old saying, pain and progress are inseparable. Now, you have to remember that in 1978, the Islanders had a fantastic team, and they were favored to win the Cup, and they were upset by the Maple Leafs at the Coliseum in Game 7 in sudden death. Chico Resch in goal, I had, sorry to say, because he's my buddy. And then in 79, even worse, they're knocked out by the Rangers in 6 games. And those were a 1-2 punch that was so severe that I believe that had they not done well, maybe not even win the Cup, but certainly gone to the finals, in 80 that Al Arbor would have been fired, and Torrey would have brought in another coach. So going into that 79-80 season, there was a lot of anxiety. There was anxiety in Game 6, for crying out loud. The Islanders were leading 3-2. They had a 2-goal lead going into the third period, and fans were chirping by the refreshment stands like the game was over. And I'm saying to myself, are they kidding? Don't they realize you got another period? And then in the third period, the Flyers scored bang, bang, in something like 3 minutes, and the game is tied. And you had to see Billy Smith playing the goal of his life to keep the Flyers from going ahead. And, of course, it wound up going into overtime, and Bobby Nye wins the cup with that shot. But my point is, there was a lot of pain that laid to that, to the celebration. Now, going into the second cup, playing against Minnesota in the final, and you got to remember, the Islanders had to go through the Rangers in several of the cup wins. So, but they were, by that second year, that was just as great a hockey team as there ever was. And they knock off Minnesota in 5. I do remember Minnie winning one game on the road, and when they came back to the Coliseum for Game 5, we were a little worried. You know, you worry because you don't want things to go wrong. And, of course, they won the game. They won the second cup. By the third cup, we, meaning myself and my producer Stan Epstein and my friend Bob Stampleman, we used to drive out together to the Coliseum from Manhattan. And I remember one day we were driving out and we were saying, talking about the game, and the conversation was not whether the Islanders would win, but by what score, because they were so powerful going into that third cup year that it was not a matter of whether they were going to win or lose. It was like, what score are they going to win by? And there were bumps. There were bumps. The series where Pittsburgh was leading them 3-1, it looked like Pittsburgh was going to win the series, and Michel Dion was in goal for the Penguins. He was playing the game of his life, and the Storm back, and they win the game, and it was just phenomenal. So, you know, they were able to surmount the tough stuff, and then, you know, playing Vancouver in the final when they were going for the third cup. I have to tell you something. That first game at the Coliseum, Vancouver looked to me like they were going to win the game. I was sitting there with my older son, Ben, and, of course, they did come back. But Vancouver was a very, very tough team. They had Richard Brodeur in goal, and they had Tiger Williams, who was constantly intimidating or trying to intimidate Mike Bossy, trying to intimidate him. So that was big. That was big. And, you know, then, but it's not like we're sitting around laying back in the chair and say, oh, this is going to be easy. It was never easy. And, of course, in the fourth cup, they beat Edmonton in 4 straight. But I've told this many, many times. It felt like 7 games. The intensity and the threat of a Gretzky, a Messier, a Glenn Anderson. I mean, they had that Jari Kurri. They had a phenomenal lineup. And, game 4 at the Coliseum, we were up 3-0. And the next thing you know, in the second period, Messier gets hot, and it's 3-2. And, you know, we always felt if Edmonton had ever gotten a win, they were capable of going on a tear. So when they did, you know, when that game came down to Kenny Morrow putting the puck into the empty net, that's when we really exhaled. That's when we exhaled. And, of course, as I said, to follow a team that won 19 straight playoff series Nobody's ever going to be able to do that again because no team is ever going to come close to doing that. So, as I said, it was pain in progress and then exultation.
Stan, we have been privileged to hear so many incredible stories. You had such an incredible career, and now you are pretty much set to retire. A lot of fans don't really know what your plans are for next year, so maybe tell our viewers what is in store for Stan Fischer's retirement.
I guess I should have been more specific when I said I was retiring. What I was retiring from was doing Islander telecasts. I'm not retiring from doing hockey work. Otherwise, I wouldn't be on the air with you guys. What I'm doing is I'm writing. I'm still writing blogs. I did an interview with Lou Lamoriello last week, and that ran on the MSG blog. I covered the entire Tavares thing every which way, as you guys know. And I'm involved in a lot of potential projects. So I am staying in hockey. I'm moving to Israel in September to be with my younger son, Simon, and his family. But I'm going to be working from there, and then I'm going to come back to New York late November and do some hockey stuff. So I'm not leaving hockey. I don't know whether you guys know, I do a weekly newsletter called the Fischler Report. It comes out 52 weeks a year. If it comes out 52 weeks a year, it means that I'm not running away from hockey. I'm as involved now in midsummer as I would be in midwinter.
I think a lot of fans are going to breathe a sigh of relief knowing you're still very much involved with the sport. Stan, it was an honor to interview you today. Me and David both had an incredible time. Thank you so much for coming on today, and we hope to be in touch with you in the future.
Well, I'll be on with you anytime you guys want, so we'll continue this dialogue, and thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much, Stan. By the way, we were so excited to interview you. I never got to introduce Ben. Ben was on the show last week. He's an amazing coworker of mine. Thank you so much for setting this up, Ben. It's been a pleasure to work with you. And Mr. Fischler, Stan, thank you so much for giving up the time this afternoon. It's been a pleasure, and I hope you have a great day.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Bye. Have a good day. So that was Stan Fischler. I'm here with Ben. An absolutely tremendous interview. We've got about 10 minutes here to talk about the show, what happened. Ben, what was your favorite thing that Stan talked about?
You know, I love when Stan tells stories. I met Stan through a mutual friend. That's how we set this thing up. And I heard him speak to me at a local synagogue event. He came by and he did a charity event for the synagogue. And what an amazing storyteller this man is. He has so much to share. And we just heard just the tip of the iceberg today with some of his stories he told about Nabokov and the cup run. So really, I'm excited to hear more and more from him as we continue this relationship.
And Stan does have his sources. And one thing I always write down whenever the person I'm interviewing says something that is important and definitely breaks some news, I always write it down. And I wrote down a few notes, and my first note was, Stan, quote, "I'm pretty sure Anthony Beauvillier will be the second line center next season." That surprised me. I always thought it'd be Jan Kovar or Brock Nelson. How do you feel about Stan making the prediction that Beauvillier will be our second-line center and separate from Matt Barzal?
It's a bold prediction for sure. Like you just said, Beauvillier and Barzal have so much chemistry, but they're both great players in their own right, and we'll see what Trotz has to do. That's really been one of the key points of Stan's interview, is that we'll see. We don't know all the answers yet. Only Barry Trotz and the future holds them, so Beauvillier may prove to be a effective second-line center. So, again, we'll have to wait and see.
I look back to Washington. Backstrom and Ovechkin were the two peas in a pod. It always worked out, but they never got that playoff success. So what does Trotz do? He separates them, and he basically spots these fourth liners, which the Islanders have plenty of, on the top line, second line. He puts Wilson, Tom Wilson, notorious Tom Wilson, on the top line with Ovi and Kuznetsov. He puts Jakub Vrana, who, I mean, again, basically a fourth liner, on the second line with Backstrom and Oshie. Do you see Trotz basically getting surprising with these lines combinations next year? Because the Islanders got a lot of grittiness. They got a lot of toughness. Could you see him spreading that out along the lines?
Well, we've seen that a lot with recent Stanley Cup champions. It's not only Washington. Pittsburgh's done it. A lot of people didn't expect guys like Connor Sherry and Brian Rust to be on the top line with Crosby, but they were there and they excelled. So, again, we'll wait and see, but who knows? Maybe we will see a potential bottom liner taking a top line spot.
Yeah, I'm just really excited for next season. Stan touched on this, and I think it's very positive and interesting to look at it this way. He said he thinks Brock Nelson has a resurgence. He says he thinks Andrew Ladd has a resurgence. And you could hold this to Jack Capuano. You could hold this to Doug Weight. But these players were just not able to thrive. The Islanders had this very toxic atmosphere where it was like John Tavares was the key, and all these players kind of limped behind. Brock Nelson, Andrew Ladd, they'll most likely be playing together on the third line if Nelson resigns. How do you feel they kind of come together? Because I got to respectfully disagree with Stan. I think Andrew Ladd has another tough season ahead of him in that the Islanders are going to switch to a more defensive system, which is Andrew Ladd's specialty. But I just don't see him able to get the scoring on the board that he needs to, getting paid $5.5 million.
You know, I'll back Stan up here. I'm confident in the resurgence. I really am a fan of Andrew Ladd's shot. And again, if Brock Nelson does have that resurgence, you could see Brock Nelson dishing the puck a lot to Andrew Ladd. This could be a future chemistry, maybe even with Josh Hosang on that third line as well. Andrew Ladd could benefit from this. And Barry Trotz has worked wonders with players, and Andrew Ladd just might be another player who's ready for a turnaround season.
Yeah, my one concern, though, if the Islanders are doing what Stan says and putting Beauvillier at the second-line center, you've got the first line of Barzal, Lee, and Bailey, presumably, and then the second line of Beauvillier, Eberle, and then you need that second-line left winger. Is that going to be Ladd? And if so, is Ladd going to be able to produce on a second line at second-line NHL levels? Is he going to be able to put up 50 points? I don't know. I'm concerned about Ladd, but we do have trust in Lou Lamoriello to do the right thing. Stan brought up so many great stories about Lou. He's been working with him since the New Jersey days. I just love what Stan had to say about Lou, because this guy, he's older. He's got some conservative ways, I would certainly say. But he just cares about this team. He cares about this fan base. He's done like 7 radio interviews. I tried to email and get him on the show, but I was respectfully declined. I mean, it was just, Lou Lamoriello is really, really passionate, and he wants to turn this team into a winner.
I mean, just look at what he's done in Toronto, and look what he's done in New Jersey. He has probably one of the better track records in NHL history. He could work magic for an NHL team before you could even blink your eyes. He knows hockey like the back of his hand. He knows what to do, and he's not afraid to do it. So we've seen him make those moves with Matt Martin, bringing in the free agents, and that adds a ton of depth for this roster. So we may even see more before the puck drops in October. So just keep your eyes open, stay on Twitter, and hope for the best.
Yeah, Lou Lamoriello, he's a guy that will really do anything to turn his team into a winner. I think he was out of luck this offseason, and I was talking about this with a few followers on Instagram on Drive for Five. Lou Lamoriello tried to bring in David Perron. He tried to bring in Robin Leonard. He tried to bring on Anton Khudobin. He tried to bring in Erik Karlsson. He tried to bring in Matt Duchene. He's trying, he's trying, he's trying, but players just don't want to play in the Brooklyn, Long Island, Belmont, Nassau Coliseum, whatever you want to call it, the Islanders' situation they have. So it's just tough for Lou Lamoriello to do his job when free agents don't even want to come here.
This for sure isn't Toronto. This isn't the place where everyone wants to go to play, as we've clearly seen this offseason. But, listen, I think it does put a chip on some players' shoulders, saying that, hey, we're here, we like it here. The fact that you don't like it here, I mean, why shouldn't you like it here?
Yeah.
These players should be out to prove to the league that Long Island is a great place to play hockey. We have a great community over here with incredible fans and incredible now management, and we're going to get an incredible arena soon. Long Island is a great place to live and play hockey, and I love for the New York Islanders of 2018-2019 to show the league that and really put on a show for this, for the entire world, if not the United States and Canada.
Well, Ben, it was an absolute pleasure to have you on the show for the second consecutive week. We promised a Stan Fistler interview. We got it. Stan was a tremendous, tremendous person to talk to. I was amazed to hear him recount every single 19 series that he covered, score by score. I mean, he knows everything, and he's got some insight into next year. He thinks Ladd, Nelson will have resurgences, and he thinks that Anthony Beauvillier will be the second-line center. I learned stuff today. I'm sure you did. Thank you so much for setting this up. I'm excited to continue working with you, and this was just an unbelievable opportunity to speak to Stan Fistler. Absolutely tremendous.
It's always a pleasure, David. Thank you so much for having me on, and let's try.